This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. If you have a mom like mine, and if you slouched like I did, the words stand up straight were part of the soundtrack of your childhood. But guess what, Mom? My next guests say the scientific obsession with good posture is fake news. Joining me now in this recorded conversation to continue to rock my mom's world are University of Pennsylvania Professor of the History of Science and author of Slouch, Posture Panic in Modern America, Beth Linker. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you, Lucy, for having me on today.
And University of Cincinnati Professor of History, Kate Sorrells. Thanks for being here, Kate.
Thanks, Lucy.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Beth, let's start with some definitions. What is good posture? How has it typically been defined?
Yeah, that's the $1 million question. Nobody knows really what good posture is. Earlier, 100 years ago, people thought that they knew what good posture was. But if you look into the science of physical therapy and biomechanics, most people will tell you that, well, we each have individual anatomies, we have different spines, and so it's really hard to say that there is one true universal posture that is good for everybody in all places at all times.
No matter what you heard from your mother or grandmother or teachers, that's the truth, huh?
That, well, if you trust science, which I do, yes, the latest studies demonstrate that. And also I can say I no longer treat patients now, but I was trained as a physical therapist and I worked in the clinic for, oh, a little short of a decade. And it is true. People have individual anatomies. And it makes sense, right? I mean, if we think about any other kind of body positivity movement lately, a lot has been said about there is no one type of person or one no ideal kind of body. And it's interesting that, you know, posture still is stuck in yesteryear. With people feeling like, and it's not that, you know, your mother meant no harm to you. I'm sure she was trying to do you a favor. And so, you know, I don't disparage those people who are saying this because it is part of the water we swim in. If you just open a browser and say, is good posture good for you? You will get a slew of websites telling you that that is the case. And even indeed, the National Institutes of Health. And if you look at the Harvard Medical School health publishing page, they also say it's really important to sit up straight and stand up straight. But if you dig deeper into the actual peer-reviewed studies that are being produced today, it will show you that there really is, at least for health reasons, good posture is not really a good predictive indicator of whether or not you're going to have pain or not pain.
Yeah. And I should clarify, no, my mother meant me no harm. She would never mean me harm. Kate, when did people really start focusing on the importance of good posture? I'm doing air quotes that our listeners can't see, but this idea of good posture.
Well, I should let Beth correct me because she is really the expert here, but and I'm more familiar with European history than American, but I definitely see some of the same things that Beth writes about in her book in my field. And it really goes back to the, well, I mean, people have talked about posture for forever, but this particular concern with the idea that we are threatened with degeneration, right? That modernity has had all these awful moral, physical, and intellectual consequences, that we're in some sort of decline, and that there are various ways that we can fix that, and concerning ourselves with our posture is one of them. That's something that you see a lot of discussion about in the mid to late 19th century, as people are worrying about, you know, the sort of the consequences of urbanization and industrialization and how that's changing our bodies and our society.
Yeah, is that what you see in your research, Beth?
Yeah, that's right. Really, I see this. So I think since, and if you look at just Western history from ancient Greeks on, you are going to see commentary on human posture. I mean, it's kind of since recorded history, we see that. But it's not until the mid to late 19th century, and namely after Charles Darwin's findings on evolution, that people begin to more study posture scientifically, and also along with that have really distinct fears. So just in brief, Darwin argued that human evolution occurred obviously through natural selection, but most importantly for this topic, he argued that the human spine and upright standing occurred before human intellectual thinking, so speech acquisition or high order thinking. Before him, for most of human history, people thought the thing that most distinguished humans from non-human animals was high order thinking and cranial size. But after Darwin, he posits that the main difference between human and non-human animal is in the spine. And so you get a lot of scientists who devote their careers to understanding human posture, what is it? And then as Kate said, along with this, we have the rise of eugenics in the early 20th century, which was all about fears of racial decline. It was white scientists wanting to secure higher birth rates among white people, and, you know, concerned about that non-white people would be overcrowding the white population. And so posture fear and posture panic gets merged in with this discussion of eugenics. And so somebody who slouches, suddenly these white scientists are worried, is this the end of the white race? Are we, meaning the white people, degenerating into lower animal forms all over again?
So, Kate, it sounds like this obsession with posture really intersects with racist ideology and kind of pseudoscience. Is that part of the story here?
Absolutely. I think there is an intersection. That's a good way of putting it. So these two things are not necessarily always the same, but they do intersect. And I think, so there's definitely a racist component to it. Class also plays a really important role. So you see within European, you know, ethnic groups, for example, concerns about how working class and people living in poverty are sort of perceived to be reflecting poorly on the sort of upper class intellectuals who are concerned about all these questions of degeneration. And so, you know, just to give you an example, there's a famous late 19th century book called Degeneration by an Austrian doctor named Max Nordau. And he expressed all the concerns that we've already talked about. And his solution, he was Jewish, and his solution was that Jews needed to sort of reform themselves. They needed to work on their physical bodies. They needed to develop strong, well-aligned bodies. And he referred to, I mean, his aim, right, was to cultivate what he called the muscular Jew, right? So there's this sort of concern that people who, you know, these were mostly East European Jewish immigrants into Central Europe, into Germany and Austria, and that there was sort of concern that they were different, that they stuck out, right? Mm. That their ethnic difference was too visible. And a lot of that was associated with their poverty. And there was this sort of tendency to look for internal reasons, what they called internal reasons for that poverty, right? So instead of looking at the structural problems like lack of access to education, discrimination that forced people into only certain occupations, lack of economic opportunity, harsh working conditions, unhealthy working conditions. Instead of focusing on that, the focus is on reforming people's poor posture, their bad diet, making them stronger, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. We're talking in this recorded interview about the history of America's obsession with posture. Beth, that's one of the things that I find confusing about this whole thing, because it sounds like there was a time in the United States when slouching was kind of fashionable, you know, seen as a mark of kind of carefree ease for people who had means, but also it was seen as a sign of laziness for people without money. Can you talk about that whole part of the story?
Yes, that's it's very complicated how we comport ourselves, right? And what are the cultural standards? And somebody who wants to resist the cultural standards can pretty easily resist it, especially if we're talking about posture, right? So just I'll go like kind of briefly what I see as the history of outward markers of class, as Kate rightly pointed out, because this is about class, it's about race, and making these fine-tuned social distinctions. So if we look at etiquette guides from the revolutionary era in America, some of the most popular guides were advising aristocrats and, you know, social climbers to stand with one foot forward and leaning back. Like, you were supposed to lean gracefully. Anybody who would sit bolt upright was seen as low class. But then if you come into the early 20th century, suddenly sitting bolt upright is the actual ideal that this new middle class of professional scientists, they're promoting this, and that this is the healthy way forward. Now, these people are decidedly middle class, I should say, again, and they're professionals. And they do come from various ethnic backgrounds. Like Kate's, you know, the muscular Jew, a lot of these physicians and physical educators came from, were immigrants themselves, came from various religious backgrounds. And you even have the Black middle class physicians and health advocates telling Black press and Black the Black Americans that they also needed to sit or stand up straight. And it was always this by the early 20th century, it was straight standing, straight sitting. Now, they were kind of, these middle class professionals were punching both up and down. They were punching up at the leisure class in America. And the leisure class in America was still kind of following the advice from the early 19th century, from the revolutionary era, you know. In the early 20th century, there was the woman called the debutante slouch. She was usually a woman who could afford Paris fashions and would wear, you know, what we would call today like what would be akin to stiletto shoes, you know. And these middle class reformers are like, no, this is terrible for the body. You know, you shouldn't be standing like that. You shouldn't be wearing those kind of shoes. So the posture crusaders who I talk about actually were instrumental in giving us comfort shoes that I wear myself today. Fashionable, but comfortable, right? But then they were also punching down because they were very concerned, especially in the United States, with the influx of immigration, this latest wave of immigration in the early 20th century with Eastern Europeans and Southern Europeans coming in, and then from the East, from East Asia. There was a lot of concern about how do we how do we homogenize this country and keep American values American? And one way to Americanize all of these immigrants who were of the working poor class was to discipline them in their bodies and to teach them to sit and stand straight. So physical educators in schools were the first ones, were at the forefront of this movement, and they were teaching young children about the importance of posture, and they would have posture contests. and they would have posture king and queen contests, and they would teach these youngsters how to measure posture by tracing silhouettes of their shadows against the wall. And the hope was that these children would bring it home to their parents, their immigrant parents, and spread the gospel of good posture to everybody.
Well, and Beth, you write about how there were national posture campaigns that were viewed as a way to prevent disease eventually.
Yes.
Tell us about those and what, if any, impact they had.
Yes. So in the late 19th century, we get the advent of the germ theory of disease. So that radically changes expert and popular understanding of how something like tuberculosis is spread, right? Before, it was thought to be a hereditary disease. And then after germ theory, everybody was like, okay, this is a contagious spread. There is a virus that is spread. But until 1940, with the advent of antibiotics, there wasn't really a magic bullet to cure tuberculosis. So these posture crusaders were convinced that good posture could prevent becoming infected with tuberculosis. And also other diseases, constipation, heartburn, nervous disease. So they had a kind of holistic idea, if you will, of health, and thought that if somebody could stand and sit straight, the organs would function better, and therefore that person would have the ability to ward off all of these diseases and disabilities. The language changes a little bit after the advent of antibiotics and with other medical advances by the mid-20th century. And there you see, in the mid-20th century, you see far more of a preoccupation with the causality between poor posture and back pain.
Hmm. Kate, how does ableism fit into this history? I mean, you know, Beth pointed out very clearly, not everybody's bodies are the same. How do you see ableism fitting into the picture?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big problem. This sort of assumption, right, that there's the plumb line and everybody's got to sort of conform to it. There are bodies where, you know, as Beth talks about, right, the bodies that just don't work that way. And I think the posture panic and the posture sort of crusade sort of, it can play into this ableist, really awful ableist assumption that people with disabilities are necessarily or are always sick and unhealthy. And it's just not true, right? But if you're measuring, if you're using a particular definition of good posture as a measure of health, then that's the conclusion you're going to draw, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, that's a big problem.
Beth, is there any benefit to good posture? I mean, as so many of our moms would have defined good posture, I know you said that's a tricky thing to define at the beginning, but yeah. Are there benefits to it?
Well, I will cite, I'll quote a recent study that was published in Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Journal. This is a group of physical therapists who are studying this health belief. And they found it's conducted in Australia, and it was primarily looking at teenagers. And they found they looked at 17-year-old bodies and then tested them again when they're in their 20s. And these are, of course, teens with using lots of phone use throughout the day. And, you know, basically testing, do they have what's called text neck, i.e., are they suffering from persistent neck pain? The study found that among young males, there is no poor posture does not seem to indicate a future of neck pain. And in females, interestingly, they found that a kind of slouching or forward upper back actually might prevent neck pain compared to an upright posture. So when you read research like that, you have to wonder, okay, you know, first of all, what is upright posture to any particular individual? What do they think it is? What does it feel like in their body? That's very hard to know. I'm more of the persuasion that movement is more important than a particular pose or posture, right? Like, even if you had, say, I put somebody in 90-90 perfect angle posture sitting, and then I said, okay, stay that way for 3 hours, that would not be good, right? And so there's so much, and I think what's important to tease out here is people can say to stand up straight, and I think you indicated this maybe in the introduction, your mother might have said, you look better, you know, if you do that. And so that gets into a different kind of aspect of this story about how beauty ideals are set into motion. And we even have, you know, business psychologists to this day who talk about how you have to have certain postures and poses in order to get a job, to ask for wage increases, ask for even a living wage. And those are, you know, they don't address the structural issues of discrimination and stigma at all. Basically, those business psychologists are arguing that you have to conform, you have to work on yourself in order to earn a living. And so the whole issue that I have with this preventative health movement, you know, of let's teach people what good posture is, let's create posture trackers that you attach to your body and it connects to your phone and your phone will chastise you when you slouch, or let's sell a bra that Taylor Swift wears, which she really does, a posture bra for $200. You know, you are creating a market, first of all, and a market that only a certain number of people can participate in. And so, and then when any one person goes into a clinic and says, you know, I'm having back pain, first of all, does this person have healthcare insurance? and if so, we would assume if they're in a clinic, they have healthcare insurance. And even then, that person is going to be blamed for having back pain. When, you know, there's no conclusive evidence that that person's individualistic behavior did anything at all to contribute to having back pain. So that is a long answer to, is there any benefit? I'm afraid I'm a little bit of a too much of a critic to kind of come back with an answer like yes, because I see all the problems, and I guess instead of any of the virtues.
Yeah. Well, I guess your answer could be read the book, huh?
Yes, yeah. Read the book.
Well, I've been talking with University of Pennsylvania professor of the history of science and author of Slouch, Posture Panic in Modern America, Beth Linker, and University of Cincinnati professor of history, Kate Sorrells. Kate and Beth will be talking about Beth's book, Slouch, Posture Panic in Modern America, at 7 o'clock tonight at Joseph Beth Booksellers. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.